Listen, we live in a time where it's not a debate at all that meditation is incredibly has an incredibly positive effect on the brain. On your body, it cannot have any, it has to have a positive effect on you, even if you're meditating poorly, right? And that's not something that's debated anymore. It was debated in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, but now we have so much scientific, valid Western scientific proof. So you're crazy not to develop some kind of daily practice, but I want to also suggest, which is not widely believed in our Western scientific world, that meditation has an effect on the outside world too. And for me, that's helpful when I wake up and I don't feel like meditating, which is 98% of the time, right? Is realizing that it's possible that it actually is having a beneficial effect on my neighbors. It's a weird idea, right? And how that could possibly be involves a little bit of logic and debate and study, which we're not going to do. But it's interesting to consider that it might have an effect on people around you. And on a more mundane level, if it does have an effect on your mind, it will have an effect on people that you run into later. I remember I was living in San Francisco and I watched three interactions of fighting that all moved from one person to another. Meaning, I saw two people fighting, right? And then this woman watching it. This woman and I were watching it, you know? And I saw this energy, like negative energy, just move from person to person. You know what I mean? So this woman was watching a fight, right? And then she started getting in a fight with somebody at the bus stop. And then the woman at the bus stop got on the bus and was really nasty to the bus driver. You know what I mean? And I just, for the first time, I just realized, what if it's just like this pattern moves from person to person? And in the same way, like a positive thing, like a calm state, can actually move. I mean, we can all agree that anger can move from person to person. In the same way, a positive mental state can also move from person to person. So when you wake up and you don't feel like meditating, it's a kind of kindness to the people around you, a kind of kindness to people that are suffering to actually practice. Humbly, right? 4, 5, 6 minutes just to sit and do that, a simple nostril breath or, you know, something like that. It's a kind of kindness to the people around you. So today I want to look at a couple different scriptures, and I'm exploring this idea of blame. Now the Buddha said my whole philosophy can be distilled down to one essential sentence, and that is prescribe all blame to a single source. If you look at the Buddhist libraries, they're massive, you know, scriptures upon scriptures upon scriptures. The Buddha said you can distill that all to one thing. Prescribe all blame to a single source. First of all, what's the single source? Your mom and your dad. No, what's the single source?
Past
actions. Yeah, I mean, he said yourself, your own past actions. And you see the same thing in many, many teachings, right? You see the same thing in Christian teachings and Hindu teachings and Kabbalah teaching, but it's so hard, and we buy it to a certain degree, but each of us have a breaking point, right, where we just can't buy it anymore. So that's what I want to get into a little bit. So first I want to look at this sentence from the, I'll read it and you tell me where it's from. Giving up attachment, perform actions as a practice of yoga. All right, but does anybody know where it's from that sentence? She says Bhagavad Gita, Hatha Yoga, Pratipika. I'll keep going. Giving up attachment, perform actions as a practice of yoga, Arjuna. The Bhagavad Gita. Be the same whether you're successful or unsuccessful. This equanimity is what is called yoga. Giving up attachment, perform actions as a practice of yoga. Be the same whether you're successful or unsuccessful. This equanimity is what is called yoga. Now, does that mean that you shouldn't care if you're successful or not? First of all, hold on, let's dissect it. Giving up attachment, perform actions as a practice of yoga. What's an action we can dissect? Going to try to talk to your boss about a raise. That's an action, right? That's an action you do in the world, that you're hoping for a certain result, okay? So, who's talking here? Krishna, right? Who's a representation of the divine. He says, give up attachment, perform action as a practice of yoga. He's not saying don't go ask for the raise, right? He's saying go ask for the raise, be the same whether you're successful or unsuccessful. So your boss says, you know what, I was actually considering about letting you go. Unfortunately, we're going to have to let you go for the company, right? I mean, that's a very opposite reaction of what you're hoping for. And so Krishna is saying you should have the same emotional reaction, whether they let you go or your boss says, you know what, I was thinking the same thing. You're like one of the most prized people. You're the most incredible person I know on the planet. And I would like to, you know, give you a $50,000 a year raise, you know. So you have these two, right, these two results. How could we possibly not care? It sounds like it's not caring, right? Any ideas on how this is possible in the world? How this is applicable? Yeah.
By not grasping to the emotion.
All right, so the emotion arises. That's one way. So you're like, I can't believe I just lost my job. But when that emotion comes for me, yeah, you cannot grasp to it, but that's hard, right? That's really hard. There's an easier way. What else? What's another thing that might be being said here? Robert?
Understanding that the karmic seed that ripened didn't come from that immediate action, but from something in the past.
Yeah, which changes it, right? You see, what Robert said is you realize that the being fired or the getting the raise is unrelated to you asking for the raise. That's what Krishna's saying. It's unrelated to you asking for the raise. It's coming from a seed that you planted a while back. And it's just ripening. So in a sense, the motivation to ask for a raise is just planting a new seed. And you're not looking for anything in the world right then to confirm the seed you just planted. Okay, a little confusing. Let's put it this way. You go to plant strawberries, right? You go to plant a strawberry patch. And you hear a whimper and you realize your dog just got his leg run over by a car in the street. Okay? You don't prescribe you planting strawberries to the dog having its broken leg. Okay, now you got to get a cast on the dog, and right? You're not like, oh, man, I shouldn't have planted the strawberries, and it's like, you know, what was I thinking? This was horrible, you know? Or the same, the opposite. Like you plant the strawberries, and I don't know, like all of a sudden you get a call that you just inherited some land, right? So it's not like you're like, wow, what a great, you know, it's unrelated, right? It's totally unrelated in your mind. So in one moment, as you're planting the strawberries, you're thinking like, this is going to be great. Like, I'm going to have some really nice, fresh, organic, like tasty strawberries. Unfortunately, my dog now has to go to the vet. You know, there is an unrelated phenomena that's going on. And in a sense, that's what he's saying. You all know this. This is one of my favorite lines, right? Arjuna, action alone, meaning action without understanding this idea of past seeds, is much inferior to action done with the yoga of understanding. Take refuge in understanding. And then he says, those driven by the pursuit of results are pathetic. Okay? He's so harsh there. Take refuge in understanding how seeds work in your life. Those driven by the pursuit of results are pathetic, right? Meaning that you're just driven by an apparent cause and relationship that's not even there. Let's look at a couple other quotes. Also from the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 16, certain that the gratification of desire is all there is, they are tormented by countless anxieties and brought to the brink of destruction. That felt like me this weekend. certain that the gratification of desire is all there is. I mean, really, my life is spent trying to achieve the most amount of pleasure with the least amount of effort. I mean, really, honestly, if I look at my life, you know, and I'm like certain that the gratification of desire is all there is, you know. I want like a nice meal, I want to be comfortable, you know, I want a good night's sleep, all of these things. And then all ways I'm trying to gratify different types of desires, you know. And then tormented by countless anxieties. You can watch the mind go through this all day. Brought to the brink of destruction. And then see if this relates to your life at all. Bewildered by ceaseless mental chatter, enveloped in the web of delusion, and addicted to sense pleasure, their lives are spent in trivia. I mean, do you resonate at all with that? Like, for me, when I read that, it's like, my God, you know? Bewildered by ceaseless mental chatter, check. Enveloped in the web of delusion, check. Addicted to sense pleasure, check. Their lives are spent in trivia, triple check. Yeah.
What does it mean by trivia?
Yeah, good question. What do you guys think? What's trivia? I think of, I was at Sunflower Market this morning, and every magazine heading, right? It was just like, who broke up with who, you know? And then before Sunflower Market, I was at the gym, and the TVs are all the same thing, you know? So-and-so, it was like, at the gym, it's like 6 in the morning, and the gym is like plowing through, the TV is just saying the most shocking, like, embarrassing things revealed about the stars. Like, this guy lied in his book, you know, this guy lied on Oprah, you know, this person cheated, you know. It was like, come on, really? Is that like, is that important? Is that, you know, is that important for us? Does that help us? In what way does that help us? And that's, to me, when I think of trivia, I think of the amount of time I spend in my mind just thinking about, like, how are things working or not working for other people? So, there's a really deep and really interesting and really powerful simple statement in a book called The Bhavanakrama by Master Kamala Shila, The Steps of the Path to Meditation, right? And he says the desire exists before the object of desire presents itself. And that, if you meditate on that, if you follow it through, it's unbelievable. Desire exists before the object of desire. An easier way for me to think about it is, and it's the same thing is true, replace desire for something else. Irritability exists before the object of irritability. Right? Which means that when your partner's making you irritable, okay? When your partner's causing you to be irritable, what's the operative word there? Causing. We're looking at cause and effect, right? Is the broken leg caused by the planting of the strawberries, right? Is the raise or the being fired caused by you asking for a raise? It appears that it is. We have to say it appears that it is, but in the scripture, in almost every tradition, it's telling us that there is not that cause and effect that we think there is. And in fact, that cause and effect is what's causing us to suffer. Is my partner causing my irritability, right? Master Kamala Shila is saying irritability exists before the cause of the apparent cause of the irritability presents itself. Meaning that I am already having irritability, and then I place it onto an external object. Now, when you watch it, it seems impossible, because it seemed like I was in a fine mood, and then my partner like did something irritating, and then that shifted me into an irritable mood. You know? And even on a neuroscientific level, we can take a look at that, right? When you sever the corpus callosum, the fibers that connect the two hemispheres of the brain. Right? So the brain can't communicate with either half. They've done experiments. So if you cover up one eye, only one part of the brain can process the visual stimulation. Right? So they show, you've heard this example before in this class, is that, so they show somebody pornography. And all of a sudden they start blushing. Now the person actually doesn't know why they're blushing, because there's not that communication going back and forth. But there's a sensation of blushing. So the doctor says to him, why are you blushing? And they immediately say, because you just said that funny joke. Now the interesting thing is the person believes that. They're not hiding or making something up. Because they're prescribing something onto the emotion, right? There's an emotion, and to have an emotion without an object of emotion to me what that suggests is that has a severe discomfort. To have an emotion without an object of the emotion. So irritability arises and I place it onto a partner. It's not quite what Kamala Shila is saying, but it's an interesting parallel. Kamala Shila is actually saying the propensity for irritability is coming from a seed we planted in the past. We planted a seed in the past for irritability. That seed, like a strawberry, is now ripening, and then I'm projecting that onto my partner and saying my partner is the cause of that irritability. Now just, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and just say, to me it's interesting if we don't agree, like, just by a show of hands, who can buy that concept and who thinks that? So raise your hand if you think that that's a little bit hard to buy. Yeah. What if you all right, we'll just leave it there. So three, raise your hand if you think that, yeah, I could maybe buy that. Yeah, all right. And then undecided. All right, so we have a little bit of mixture. Consider this. What would it look like if you had the notion that you have no control in the present moment? You have no control in the present moment what's going to happen. For example, when you leave the studio, you have no real control of what's going to happen. Even in your mind. Like whether somebody yells at you. You know, I had a friend who was going into Raging Sage and a homeless guy yelled at her. And she was disturbed for a couple of days. Like he used profane, and to my mind it was like, why would you get upset? But you know, but for her, like, so in that moment she got out of her car and she was in a fine mood, right? And then she was disturbed for a couple of days. Like, so in a sense she didn't really have control of her mind, right? So imagine that just imagine what your life would look like if you had no control in the present moment. And everything you do now in the present moment will ripen in the future. Those two concepts, forget everything else, just play with those two concepts. You have no control in the present moment of what happens, and everything you do in the present moment will ripen in the future as a similar seed. When I really sit and meditate, it's a beautiful thing to meditate on. It's a type of meditation, it's like an analytical meditation. It's very beautiful. Something happens. If you really sit with it for 30 minutes or something and play with that notion, what happens for me is this deep feeling of like, ah, right? There's a deep relief because almost 90% of my energy is spent trying to control things in the present moment. You see, 90% of my energy is trying to control things in the present moment. And when things aren't going my way, I start grasping. I start like kicking and screaming and biting and scratching, you know, to try to like somehow steer things. And then even when I'm biting and scratching and kicking and screaming, if they still not going my way, you know, then I just like go into the bathroom and throw a temper tantrum, you know. Like, I mean, you know, it's like that's like the childish mind, right? But what if the present moment was just arising from the past? You see, there's less energy being expended on the present moment. I think of it like a football game, right? Of course you're going to try. Of course you're going to be tackled. You know? You don't stop when you're tackled. Watch the guys, right? They don't stop and like kick and scream. You know, like, come on, I'm just, leave me alone, I'm trying to get to the goal, you know, there's no like fussing. And watch their eyes. They don't even look at who just tackled them. That's the amazing thing. They don't even look at them. It doesn't matter. It's like, yeah, that's a given, right? That's a given. If I could somehow incorporate that same quality when I got tackled in life. Because the person that just tackled me, it has nothing to do with them, right? But instead, when they tackle me, I turn around and be like, would you leave me alone? Like, stop harassing me? Or, you know, it's all this, like, bickering and this, like, the suffering comes about. The suffering comes about. And then if I had in my mind the notion that every action I did was planting a seed that would ripen in the future, my day would be very different. And I want to suggest that it would be more pleasant. It would be a sweeter day. And I don't mean this in the, if any of you are in like Catholics Anonymous or anything, I don't mean this in the terms of guilt, right? Like, I should be guilty every time I do something negative. No, it's just, you know, you just realize, oh, that was, you know, when I get to the place of really like starting to have some shraddha, some faith in this idea, it's not, the guilt doesn't come up when I screw up, right? I yell at somebody. It's not a feeling of guilt. It's just a gentle, small feeling of regret. Now I have to experience that in the future. That, you know, that was dumb, but I'm human and I'll continue to make mistakes. You know, it's that feeling, but it's just like, oh, you know, I just planted some weeds in the garden. And the same thing when I plant the strawberries. It's just that feeling of like, ah, in 2 months I'm going to have strawberries. It's a nice feeling. So just play with that idea. Giving up attachment, perform action as a practice of yoga. Giving up attachment, perform action, right? As a practice of is wisdom. Be the same whether you're successful or unsuccessful. Not meaning that you don't care, right? But the same because the reaction is not coming from your action. You see, that's the important thing with equanimity. It's not like I don't care and everything's good. No, I don't want to get fired. But I'm not like getting tackled in football. I'm realizing that getting fired is not coming from my immediate action. So there's a slight disassociation, a slight emotional detachment from the immediate situation. This equanimity is what is called yoga. So let's end it there. Prescribe all blame to a single source. Prescribe all blame to a single source. That single source would be the actions you've planted in the past. And again, it's not important to believe it or not believe it. It's just an interesting experiment to consider, would it make you a happier person? You know, I mean, that's ultimately the test. Would it make you a happier person if you actually lived that way? You know, Jesus says you can't get grapes from thistles, right? The seeds you plant will be the seeds that ripen for you. And just gently, with a kind of daily meditation practice, just to gently start to habituate the mind into a different way of interacting in the world. They say it takes 30 days to create a habit. If you're trying to learn guitar or piano, or if you want to start a meditation practice, they say it takes 30 days to create a habit. And we all have direct experience with this because most of us brush our teeth every day, right? And when we first started, we didn't like brushing our teeth. If you can go back and remember, I hated it. Like my mother had to like bribe me with candy, right? But now it's a habit. Now I can't go for a day without brushing my teeth. It's a discomfort in the body. In the same way, to stop a life of trivia, right? To stop gossiping. To stop being dishonest, to start to have a slightly more moral foundation because I want to plant those seeds. It's just a habit. It's just a habit of the mind. Like right now, I can't imagine what I would talk to people if I didn't talk about gossip. You know what I mean? I'm like, what would we talk about? Like at work, what would I talk about, you know? But it's just a habit. And you know, when I've actually made a little effort for a day or two, I realize, wow, there is actually other stuff to talk about, you know? It's just a habit. So let's leave it at that.